The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You're listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. My co-host for this one is Terry Cushman at CushmanMLB. If you want more Bastards of Boston Baseball content, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. So before we begin, temperature check, Terry. Where are you? How you feel?
I think I'm just at the numbness stage of things now. I mean, you don't get mad about losses anymore. I guess I get kind of mad when Sam Kennedy opens his mouth as he did this week. There was another quote from Bob Nightingale this morning where the Red Sox are like tripling down now that Craig Breslow's job is not in danger, but you know, it's to the point where they're all a bunch of pathological liars and it's just a waiting game. They're gonna do it, they're gonna pull the trigger. And other quotes are still continuing to come out that John Henry is worried about the direction of this team. And my interpretation of that is, when you're talking about the direction, you're worried about the next 2, 3, 4 years. And you've got a dumbass calling the shots named Craig Breslow, who's getting worse every year. So I don't, you can say what you want. You can lie to me all you want about Craig Breslow's job status, but he's gone. He is gone, and it's only a matter of time.
You know, you lose the third game today. You still take the series. We had a pretty good feeling that we were going to get swept. And then it didn't happen. You take game one. You take game two. You've outscored this opponent by over 10 runs. I'm pretty sure it was 16-4. I could be wrong. I'm not looking at the scores. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, the Boston Red Sox continue to just surprise us for all the more unique reasons out there. And we have all the ugly stats, except for the ninth inning when we apparently just dominate, which doesn't make any sense. Usually the game's over. You've down by 4 or 5 runs. So it doesn't matter how well you do in the ninth inning, but we're not a come from behind team. You go down by 4 runs. How many times have the Red Sox actually come back from behind 4 runs? Maybe one
Very
or two
few.
This year.
Exactly.
Maybe, right? Exactly. I don't know the number off the top of my head. The thing is, like you said, We're going to continue being disappointed. I'm past the point of being upset, yelling, screaming, cussing people or things out, whatever, doesn't matter. My temperature check right now is probably like where Jeremy was a couple weeks ago when he said 1.9. I echoed that sentiment on the last show. I'm probably about where I was last time. You know, there's no surprises. When we lose, I'm not shocked. When we win, depending on how we win, I'm kind of shocked, because every single time we win, as Jeremy had so eloquently put it, we are in a worse spot than we were before. We actually lose by winning. So I'm with you. I don't think that Breslow has a spot next year. I think he has to be gone. And whoever has the seat, they're going to have to be given 3-4 years and full control over all operating decisions. You want a clean house, get rid of managers? Bye-bye. Everybody's gone. And Tracy, I don't think is going to, you know, get another shot or job here in Boston next year, because I don't think that's going to be even a top 5, 6, 7 choice for the Boston Red Sox. We're failing in too many categories. We're doing poorly. It feels like forever. It feels like years that Alex Cora hasn't been here because of how bad this year has been. What would you do if I told you it was less than a couple months? You know, it doesn't seem real. And here we are. So the Boston Red Sox are a dumpster fire, for the lack of a better term. And literally the best thing about this game, even though we lost, were the fans from Scotland. You know, they were partying, shirts off, singing songs 10 minutes after the song was over. They didn't care. Baseball to them is probably cricket light, and that's great for you guys. I don't know if they followed too much of the sport, but that was the most entertaining thing about the game. I mean, those fans are having a great time.
I think it was Jen McCaffrey pointed out that the atmosphere, because of the Scottish fans' presence, was electric. And she pointed out how there's a lot of young players on this team who have never experienced that type of a atmosphere at Fenway. And I just kind of rolled my eyes because I'm like, it's not a real thing. I mean, it's cool to have an invasion like this, you know, from fans that are really here to cheer on another team in another sport. But it's annoying that John Henry's profiting off of this. And it's they were belting out Sweet Caroline. I was listening on the radio. They were belting that out as like they've got more pride than actual Red Sox fans now. And that's not an indictment on Red Sox fans. We've been through the ringer here. But man, those Scots were fired up. And in a way, it's almost sad because, you know, that used to be a nightly thing at Fenway. You know, when winning was our culture, it wasn't an expectation. It was a culture. And man, we're just so far removed from that.
Well, the reason why Scotland was extra jazzed today is because they were playing in the World Cup, and at Foxborough, they beat Haiti in the 90th minute. They scored a goal at the end of the game, and they got themselves 3 points. And on top of all that, Scotland is in a, for those that are soccer fans as well, World Cup is the world's game, right? Every country can play if you have a team and you qualify, which is great. It's one of the cheapest sports to play. Real kind of short story here. They have both Brazil and Morocco in their group. That's really hard. Brazil has won the World Cup 5 times. Morocco has never won it, but is a dark horse candidate. You need 6 points really to advance. That's how you lock it up. If they draw 2 times against Brazil and Morocco, or they win against either one of those opponents, they're advancing to the knockout stage, which is incredible considering two of those teams that are in their group are in the top 10. Scotland is ranked maybe 38 overall. Brazil's ranked 6th. Morocco's ranked 7th. The World Cup is once every 4 years. So this is a very, very special time for Scotland because you're winning, not your country, and in the last minute of the game. So absolutely, I'm super pumped for Scotland. There was a thing going around. People in Boston were trying to find, like, Airbnbs were trying to find, like, the Scottish flag so they could support their, you know, incoming possible clients, I guess you want to call it, or, you know, bed friends, whatever. I don't know what the word is for Airbnb people. But, you know, it was fun. Like, honestly, today was actually fun. And even though we lost, that was the best part of the game. Like you said, Terry, these guys were belting it. They heard it in Wisconsin. I mean, honestly, if I was outside of Fenway Park and I heard it, I'd be like, they must be the first place team. They must be, you know, the best team in baseball because these guys had such pride. And you're right. These fans that are watching baseball, possibly for the very first time watching and sitting at Fenway Park, watching the Red Sox play, they're showing more pride, passion, and just love for the game, the atmosphere, everything, than some Red Sox fans who are probably sitting on their phones, completely checked out, because that's what the Boston Red Sox have been this year. It feels like they're just checked out.
It has. Well, why don't we just work backwards here? We're going to save this, but we're just so far into it. And then we'll get to Connolly early. Sean McAdam in his Sunday column, which he calls Some Things That I Think. Catchy name to it. I don't mean that in a bad way. John Henry was seen at Yankee Stadium in the series last week. And it gave me a bit of pause. I'm like, whoa, you know, what's he doing there? You know, why is he present, you know, on the road? And it turns out that there was an MLB owners meeting in Manhattan earlier in the week. So all the owners from Major League Baseball were out there. So you're like, oh, all right, well, that makes perfect sense. You know, he was in town kind of on sort of separate business. But he ended up leaving after the owners' meeting, came back to Boston or Massachusetts, wherever his mansion is, got his family together. I did point out on whatever podcast it was that he did have a young child with him, a grandson or someone, I would assume. And you could see Henry and the kid up in the booth, and they came back just to be seen. So I don't know how to read that. Like, why is he being more visible? It's like, there's no obvious answer. There's no obvious answer.
No, there's not. And here's the thing. Any take that someone has for that, you're right, you're wrong, you don't know. You have no idea. The only people that know are the people that are in his inner circle. I'm curious if he was doing it because you have so many guests there, people that are experiencing baseball for the very first time, and you want to give the illusion that owners of major franchises show up to every single game and care regardless of how their team is doing. And I don't know if Scotland knows what's going on with the Boston Red Sox. I don't think half of them give two hoots. They're just here for the experience, and that was it. And great. So the old guy who owns the team is here, and his grandson's here. Big whoop, whatever. Why is he here, though? Does it matter? Does it matter? I mean, is it helping the Boston Red Sox if he shows up? It feels kind of like...
Well, just on the road, though, is what made it interesting. You know, in the Bronx, I'm talking about. And I don't know. I mean, why is it important for him to be present right now? And it's not like he's always happy. He's always, you know, he's always super chill when you're seeing him. So he's not like this stressed out owner. I don't know. I mean, what I would like to believe it is he's getting ready to make some moves. And if he's more present, he's going to be more engaged. And I don't know, perhaps he'll just be a little bit more respected as he approaches whoever he needs to approach to put in that front office. If he's barking orders from his yacht, I mean, that's not a good look. Do you want to go? Right. Do you want to go work with an absentee owner who, by most optics, isn't appreciative of the work his executives do and fires everybody after 3 years? Like, I don't know. I guess, in short, I guess what I'm trying to say here is he might be trying to rehabilitate his likability ratings with the industry.
Do you think it's possible for him to do that? Do you think someone's able to come back after they've been that far down? Because I kind of feel like at this point, what you've won 4 World Series titles. You know how to win. You can't sit here with a straight face saying you're trying to compete right now. You can't. You cannot. Because this is a pay-to-play sport. The teams that pay the most money usually do the best. Usually, right? There are a couple of outliers out there. You can't put this product out there making us think that this is the best you can do. You can do better. You can be smarter. And sometimes less is more. You don't need to make 15 trades during the offseason. You don't need to make 5 trades during the season before the deadline because you think, or you need to give the optics of the situation that you know what's going on and you can handle the pressure, you can handle the situation. The fact of the matter is, we made trades that just didn't make sense during the offseason. You traded pitchers for other pitchers, but you didn't really give them full chances or full opportunities. You need to give away Kyle Harrison to get a couple of hitters that were going to be used somewhat regularly and one's really only had a couple of decent games all year. Meanwhile, Kyle Harrison, you know, didn't pitch his best. That was the joke. Six innings, struck out three, allowed three hits. And his ERA is up in the twos, I think, now because he had a clunker against Oakland. Still one of the better pitchers in the NL. Is he still really up there for the Cy Young? Probably not. He probably slipped to like the sixth or seventh spot. But still, I mean, I think it's an optics thing. Sure, you're trying to give the illusion that you care and you're trying to get some good grace back. But I feel you've tumbled so far down and you've done nothing for so many years. And now you've, because of the president of baseball operations, you've actually taken this team backwards, probably a year or two. I don't see the Boston Red Sox competitive probably until 2028, 29. I think you're 2-3 years away again because you're not, you've made the wrong moves. And now it's going to take you a couple of years. You're going to have to trade away the best closer, one of the best eighth inning guys, probably the one of the better first basemen to get picks again and restock and retool. And then you're going to have to spend money during the offseason and get other players with expiring contracts on either one-year deals or two-year deals. And you'll probably trade half of them again because how else are you going to get back there? You know, you mentioned Terry on one of the last shows. I don't think you were with me when you mentioned about one of the last big free agent deals. Manny Ramirez, 8 years, $160 million. It's crazy when you think about it. But at the time, it was a crazy deal. The Boston Red Sox aren't doing that. Or if they are, they're giving it to players, and then the players are getting traded. So you've given the appearance because that's now what we see, right? Boston is not a destination city. If you want me to come to Boston, you're going to have to pay me more money. And that's crazy. That never used to be the case, but it is now because the Boston Red Sox are not in win now mode. They're not even in win next year mode or the year after that. That's how bad this team is. And I frankly, I don't think John Henry can come back from that. I really don't.
Well, I think the one thing he needs to do is he needs to be a little bit more accessible to the media. I mean, he hasn't really given any official interviews with baseball people. He had the Forbes interview last month, but what does that matter? I mean, are they going to be asking him tough baseball questions? No, because they're not a baseball publication. So, you know, you get quotes from that, but he needs to be more accessible with the beat writers, with the bigger national writers, Rosenthal, Passan. And he needs to be, like you were just sending me, he needs to be accountable. He needs to admit he was wrong. He needs to admit mistakes were made. And he needs to admit that there does need to be a change in philosophy. And he's going to bring in the people that can do it, that can address that. That's what needs to happen. That will improve his likability. You know, even if it's a carefully, not scripted, but a carefully structured interview with Nesson, even if it's some type of softball questions, he should still go out there and do it. And then by doing so, maybe other executives will be like, all right, you know, he's turning over a new leaf. He's being accountable. Maybe this is now the type of owner I might be willing to work for.
Here's the thing, though. Like you're just talking about accountability, right? You're not really showing us accountability if the person who's making all the decisions is continuing to make those decisions. You need to get rid of them. Put anybody else in there. Doesn't matter. You can make it a collective. I don't care. But right now, less is more. And having that person in there, someone who doesn't know how to play nice with 27 other GMs, only two will actually make moves with them. There are 27 GMs out there that are raising their hand, waiting to make a move with the Boston Red Sox. They're waiting. They want to bleed this team further than it's already been bled. But John Henry needs to actually get ahead of this and say, you know, we've made some mistakes. And the first thing that I got to do, this is the thing. You want to buy the good grace back, you need to fire Craig Breslow. You need to let him go, dismiss him, whatever excuse you want to call it under the book. You've had no problem dismissing other people with less reason. You've had no problem doing it. So why is there an issue all of a sudden now? Craig Breslin's done a...
Why is he bulletproof, in other words?
Why? What is he... Did he see something that... did he catch someone in an office with a secretary and he's going to blurt it out if it gets out? Like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, this is a multi-million dollar business and you're letting it continue to flounder. Why? It just doesn't make any sense. I'm past the point of being upset, angry. I think Jeremy was the first one. It's like, this sucks. This team sucks. Like, you can't say you're not right with that. Like, this team is in trouble. The Boston Red Sox are not a likable team. This is, at best, a okay team. You might win. You're probably not going to. And you have to accept that. But, I mean, in order to get that likability factor back, accountability would be huge. And that starts with letting your baseball president of operations, go. You need to let him go. That's how it starts. You want to gain the fans back. You want to gain their trust back. That's how you start. You get rid of him.
Connelly really sucked today.
You want to talk about that next?
Yeah, may as well.
Okay,
cool. I thought that was a good segue.
Yeah, I mean, John Henry, Connelly Early, right? One crap to another crap. So Connelly Early over the last two starts had allowed six earned. He allowed six earned today. First pitch of the game, Wyatt Langford, who hasn't played like a lot this year, who Texas thought was going to be their golden child, right? He flew through the minors, flew from draft to majors, it felt like, in a blink of an eye. First pitch, launch, 1-0 Texas. Not long after that, in the second inning, Kyle Higashioka, 3-run Johnny. Not a home run hitter. Only had six, maybe seven. I think that was the seventh one of the year. We're down 4-0, and we're in the top of the second inning. So already I've told myself two things. One, Connelly Early having himself a clunker. Two, we've lost this game because we're not going to come back from a 4-run deficit. Here's the other thing. I'm a little bit nervous with Connelly Early. Not a lot. I'm not hitting the alarm bells right now, but I will say this. This is a young rookie who has less than one full year of major league experience. Do we think it's fatigue or do we think it's a little blip on the radar? Because this is someone that all of last month had allowed 10, 11 runs in the whole month of May. He's allowed 12 and three starts so far. It's not shaping up to be a very good month for him right now. His ERA is going to continue soaring. Are you, my question to you, Terry, are you concerned knowing full well that we have put such stock in both Connelly Early and Peyton Tolley? Because I really need to tell myself so I don't lose my mind that this is just a blip in the road. He hasn't gotten, the wheels fully running yet. He's still got to go for his first maintenance check for that Ferrari package, right? I want to call it a blip. What do you think?
Well, wasn't his velocity down significantly? So I was listening on.
Might have lost you, Terry. Can you hear me?
Sorry about that.
No, it's all good.
Yeah, my whole internet just cut out altogether.
No,
but,
no worries.
So what I was saying going into that, I think his velocity was down and I wasn't home. I didn't have my social media. I was listening on the radio. I chose the Texas feed because I just can't listen. I honestly think I dislike Will Fleming more than I even dislike David O'Brien. And that's saying something. So I wasn't getting all the nuggets and stuff, but in the first inning, his velocity was down to 92 miles an hour. I don't know if it ticked up over the course of the next handful of innings, but that's a concern. I mean, he's usually sitting 95, 96. And so there's that. And generally, I mean, the league is going to catch up to you at some point, and then it's up to you to adjust on them. So I'm not overly worried long term, but you've seen Tolley's velocity go up and down as well, which is a bit of a concern. So I don't know. I mean, we're at the point where we're questioning everything, you know, pitching program, hitting program, drive line. It's like,
drive line's terrible. Drive line needs to go. Kick that on the door like your ex-girlfriend. Get rid of her. Get rid of it. It's terrible. I'll say this much really quickly for Conley early. A couple ticks down, yes. Both home run balls, if you were to have a tee at home plate and put a ball on the tee, that's where those pitches were. They were middle, maybe a little to the left, a little to the right, both mashable home runs. Wyatt Langford has a little bit of power. No surprise that he launched that one. Kyle Higashioka got a changeup. He didn't get a fastball, and he just had the perfect launch angle for it, and that made it 4-0. Soccer term for those not paying attention, that means 4-0. For those that don't know, 4-0 after two really big swings. Am I concerned about it? Because, yeah, you said he's hit 95, 96. The home run off of the home run from Langford was like 93, 94, so maybe it was a couple ticks down. Okay. Higashioka hit like an 82 mile an hour changeup. Like I wasn't really concerned about the changeup. It was just perfectly placed for him to hit it. That's it. You know, like when you see it, as soon as you see the pitch get in there and you see the bat make contact with the ball, you know, it's going for extra bases minimum. It's either going top of the wall, or it's going over it. No question. That's it. So when you watch that one on replay, Terry, you're going to see what I'm talking about. They were like dialed in, like right down the pipe. One was just a bullet and one had a little bit of float, and Higashioka and Langford hit them both. I don't know, man. A couple ticks. Does it make all the difference? No. Does it make some difference? Yes. Is there a difference between 96 and 92? Yes. You have I don't know how many extra hundredths of a second you get for your brain to process what pitch you want to, you know, you're looking for. But yeah, it does make a difference. You know, Aroldis Chapman throwing 105 or 95, big difference. 195, big difference. So yeah, 5 miles does make a huge swing. I don't know if it was that many ticks down that they were able to just tee off. The strikeout numbers were also low too, which wasn't pretty. I think he only had what, 3?
Yeah, and the last several starts, he's kind of skated. I mean, I think this might be his worst start of his career, which only dates back to last September. But yeah, to put up a 6 spot, and looking back though, he easily could have had that type of a night. You know, he's been very good at stranding base runners so far in a very short sample size. And, you know, that second inning, I mean, he gave up the first pitch home run, but then he comes out for the second, and the bottom of their order just went to town on him. Like you said, Justin Foscue, I don't know if that's how you say it, Cody Freeman, each single to start the second, and then Higashioka, like you said, ran into one, homered. Now it's 4-0. So now the game's basically in insurmountable lead territory. You know, typically we don't come back from these, and the Red Sox did end up putting up 4 runs overall, but the Rangers were able to score 2 insurance runs, I think, in the 4th inning. A couple of doubles were hit in the inning, nothing left the yard, but so, you know, I don't know. It's going to be curious to see what the next 2, 3, 4 starts are for Connelly early. But as I also said in a recent show, Early and Toley have bailed you out if you're Craig Breslow. And I don't even know if that's the right term. I mean, we're still 10 or 11 under, but
I would agree with you though, considering everything you've gotten rid of. You're absolutely right.
You'd be 18 to 20 under if this rotation was trash. If these guys weren't able to take the steps that they've taken as rookies to, you know, keep the rotation afloat, this would be, it's already on pace to be the worst season of the 21st century. It's on pace for that. And you start selling, you'll definitely get to that. You know, when Chapman isn't around any longer to close the ninth and Contreras isn't you know, isn't here to basically carry this offense. I guess Rafaela would, you know, shouldn't be forgotten. He's been probably your second best hitter. But yeah, I was thinking yesterday, you know, there's so many guys that were here and it's just forgettable. You know, Kyle Schwarber is one of them. He was only a Red Sox player for 2 months. But man, what an impact. Another
offensively,
guy.
Defensively, yeah. Though, you and I went to the game that yeah. he was playing first base, and I don't want to talk about it.
Well, you know, we've seen a couple like that just in the last week. You know, dudes just losing it in the light. But Yoenis Cespedes, he was here for a couple months. Remember that? Yoenis Cespedes yeah. played for the Boston Red Sox. He was in the lineup cards. You know, John Farrell was writing his name in the lineup cards. You know, and I think Contreras is going to be one of those guys, unfortunately.
Yeah. Contreras, really quick. I think this is another one. You know, he's had 16 home runs last year. He had 20 altogether. We talked about it briefly before the show. Swing, perfect for Fenway Park. But this is going to be one of the names that I think there's a really, really good chance that gets moved. Because the Boston Red Sox need to retool. And it's going to mean Florida Marlins 97-2003 blow it up. Fire sale everything. And you have to start all over. Because Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, as much as we want them to succeed, they're looking like shadows compared to Chase Madroth and Montgomery. Montgomery hit a home run his first game. I mean, it's just, it's crazy when you think about it, but here you are. The Boston Red Sox continue to frustrate me with Yoshida's at third base one out. And was it Willier Abreu that grounded out into a 3-2 double play? I'm pretty sure that's what that was. And I remember I just like looked at my wife and I'm like, you won't believe what just happened. She goes, did they lose? I'm like, not yet, but it's coming that way. We just can't even do the bad things. You know, we can't even do those things right. But past Contreras, before we, I think, probably go back to him in a second, the Boston Red Sox have the second least amount of challenges correctly called. It was 56 challenges. The only team that's worse is the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then on top of that, they were sharing some other statistics about the Boston Red Sox at Fenway. 3.58 runs per game. It's the second fewest. And then your 23 home runs at home are the fewest in Major League Baseball. You've had 23 home runs at home. They're 12-21, which is the second worst start at home since 1932. And in a 162 game season, I believe they said that was the worst. And the only fun stats that they shared were that Aroldis Chapman is four strikeouts away from breaking Hoyt Willem's record as a reliever, and the Red Sox do well in the ninth inning. Otherwise, this team needs to sell. Like, you just need to wake up knowing if you're hitting the ball well and you're relevant, you're leaving. You won't be playing for the Boston Red Sox in August or September. It just won't be happening. That means Chapman is gone. That means Whitlock is gone. That means possibly one of your additional outfielders is gone. I think Contreras has a chance to also be gone. Maybe even Sonny Gray. I mean, there's going to be a lot of names that should be leaving the Boston Red Sox. But I want that to happen along with Craig Breslow being dismissed.
Well, it will be. Yeah. I think you can kind of still keep somewhat of a core. I mean, I wouldn't trade Rafaela. I wouldn't trade Abreu unless I was offered, like, unless it was something, an offer you couldn't refuse. But I think you have to keep them. I mean, do you really want to trade Anthony or Meyer with their value all the way down? I think you're better off just new hitting program, trying to let's see what they look like. But and hopefully Christian Campbell somehow can be rehabilitated down there on a new program. But you're months to a couple of years from really finding that out. And that's what's so brutal. Like, the strike's probably going to happen. And the Dodgers, like I said recently, they know what they're coming back to. They're going to get right back on that wagon and keep going. The Yankees will do the same. I think the Rays have a pretty bright future, as it appears. You know, Seattle's got a bright future. They all know what they're coming back to. We don't know. We have no idea what we will come back to. And it's just hard to wrap your head around. I've never felt so hopeless as a Red Sox fan. There's nobody steering the ship. You're hitting every iceberg in sight. It's just so.
I've been saying this is like being told to get into a car. You have to get up to 80 miles an hour. You can't see what's in front of you, and there's no seatbelts. That's this team right now, as opposed to driving a four-door with airbags, with your vision thingy that they have, where like if you get too close, the brakes automatically go. No. This one, we'll throw one extra feature in there. There's no brakes, but you have to get to 80 and you can't see where you're going. That's this team right now. You want to get into the upcoming series?
Let's do it.
All right, my friend. So the Red Sox can't lose two in a row tomorrow, thankfully. They are not playing on Monday. They will get 3 days against the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll be at, I believe it's at home, which is nice. And it's going to be Peyton Tolley against Dylan Cease for game one. So who do you have winning game one?
Yeah, Cease has been up and down, but generally speaking, he's had a decent season last I checked. I don't know. I mean, the Blue Jays have scuffled all year. They haven't really consistently gone on a run, but their offense should be able to get to Peyton Tolley, I would say. So, you know what? I'm going to give it to the Blue Jays.
I'm going to give it to the Blue Jays for game one. And then game two, just quickly taking a look at it, we got Jake Bennett against Max Scherzer. I think Scherzer is going to right the ship. And I think Scherzer wins game two. And I think the Blue Jays are up 2-0. What do you have?
Bennett did not look good in his last start. I think Scherzer, I'm not seeing the names here, so I just can't pull up his logs as quickly as I need to. But I think, isn't Scherzer coming off of a pretty good start or two?
He got shelled in his last one because he just came back, but I'm still not really like concerned. Max Scherzer at the end of the day is a guy that can ball. Like he doesn't have the crazy speed that he used to have. Like he's not going to strike out 10 in a game. The guy's 41 years old. He's 1-4 with a 10.23 ERA, but it just wouldn't surprise me for him to just absolutely light it up against us. And you know, we're left holding the bag. His first start in March this year, 6 innings, struck out 4. And everyone's like, wow, he's going to be here. Like this is the guy. And then he missed some time, obviously did not pitch for the entire month of May after he got shelled. And his first start was against Philadelphia. That's one of the better teams in baseball. So I'm not surprised he gave up 2 home runs. He gave up 5 runs and 3+. The Boston Red Sox are not that team. We're not gonna tee off against Max Scherzer. There is going to be the Blue Jays teeing off against Jake Bennett, which is why I have the Red Sox down 2-0 in the hole.
Okay. Yeah, Scherzer got his 3,500th strikeout. So that's what I saw. And he gave up 5 in his last outing. Right before he got hurt, he gave up 7. So that's 12 earned combined in his last 2 outings. So I don't know. You think he's going to win it for him?
Yeah, because it would just be the most, expected Red Sox result. The Red Sox get torched by Max Scherzer, who shows for 6+, strikes out 5, allows 1 earned over 5 hits. Calling it.
Yeah, Bennett's just, he's such a wild card being a young guy, and he's only up here out of necessity, basically, because Bayo was sent down. And Bale looked okay. He just made his first start with the Woo Sox. It wasn't like super impressive, but
I saw one. I don't know if it was his first one, but it was 5 innings, struck out 7, allowed 1 hit, and it was a solo home run. That was it. But I don't know if that was his first or second one. That might have been his first one. I don't know how he did in his second appearance, but it sucks. It sucks that he's dominating at AAA. Like, I don't want him to be the Worcester magician. And then when he comes to Fenway, it's like throwing up all over your shoes, as Jason Kelly would say. You know, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see him get torched again. I just can't do it.
I'll pick the Blue Jays over. Excuse me, the Red Sox over the Blue Jays with Scherzer. I keep wanting to say Schwarber.
Scherzer, yeah. It's the other night I was saying I don't know who I was confusing. I kept mixing up two names. I can't remember who it was, but I said the wrong name twice. I'm with you, dude. Boston Red Sox makes you feel silly. The third game that we have in this series, it's Sonny Gray against Trey Savage. Trey Savage has not had back-to-back good starts. And Sonny Gray has only lost one game this year. It was April 14th. Since that day, he has posted 6 wins, no losses, and 2 no decisions. So I kind of feel like I have to go with Sonny Gray's name. I mean, he's one of the leaders in Major League Baseball this year with wins, which is a crazy surprise. He's 8-1 right now. I didn't think I was going to say this, but dude might actually get 15, 16 wins this year. It's nuts. So I got Sonny Gray winning game 3.
I mean, he's on pace for 17 or 18, and I mean, he could win 20. Who knows? But I'll pick Sonny Gray.
Imagine Sonny winning 20.
I know. It's just so bad. I think Porcello was the last one to do it, if I'm not mistaken. But it's hard to pick against him. And if you're looking for a reason to pick the Red Sox, I mean, that's the one surefire game to do it. They could win game one with Tolley, but I just think this offense is cagey enough to know that they're going to be attacked with mostly fastballs or sinkers. And I think they'll put up at least a 4 or 5 spot on him.
I want to say that I misspoke earlier about Brian Baio. That solo home run, only hit in 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, was with the Dominican Republic for the World Baseball Classic. Worcester, he has 1 game, 4 innings, allowed 2 runs and 5 hits, struck out 5. So I wanted to just reflect that I made a mistake there. You know, Craig, take notes. This is accountability. John, listen, take notes. This is accountability. I made a mistake, and now I'm owning it. You can do it too. We'd really appreciate it if you could do that. But overall, Red Sox lose 2 out of the next 3. I think we're pretty much
on that. I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Anything else you want to add?
Nope.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. You are listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by your Bastards of Boston Baseball. And if you want to check out any daily content, bastardsofbostonbaseball.com is where you can go. Everyone have a great day.